Boeing shows the world the first Dreamliner. The FAA proposes controversial changes in separation. And 8 escape serious injury when their tour helicopter goes down in the Hudson River. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Monday, July 9th, 2007. Boeing's Dreamliner made its official debut on Sunday afternoon in Everett, Washington, and the hype was commensurate with the company's prediction that the 787 will revolutionize the industry. Tom Brokaw emceed, and speakers extolled the virtues of globalization, quieter airliners, and more hospitable cabin environments for about an hour. When Boeing finally unveiled the carbon fiber composite-bodied 787, flight attendants representing the 47 airlines which have ordered the 787 watched from center stage. Boeing says the event was broadcast in 9 different languages via satellite and webcast, and reached 100 million or more viewers in 45 countries. Having delivered on the hoopla, Boeing must now deliver on the plane itself. The first of 6 787s to be used in certification testing is scheduled to fly late this summer, with certification and first deliveries in May 2008. When two airliners come closer than 5 miles to each other in the air, traveling head-on, and one or both pilots have to take evasive action to avoid a collision, the Federal Aviation Administration calls that a high-risk incident, and the controller handling the traffic can be cited for a proximity violation. Last year, the FAA counted 1,104 operational errors, of which 610 were classified high risk. Now, the FAA wants to redefine a high mid-air risk as a 4-mile close call, which would cause the number of high-risk reports to drop in half. As you might imagine, this lower standard has some people alarmed. At the top of that list would be the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. NATCA Vice President Brian Zelonis helped draw up the old system. Quote, "It's going to make them look like geniuses when really they've done nothing. You improve safety by reducing operational errors, not recategorizing them," unquote. A tour helicopter, operated by Liberty Helicopters, suffered an apparent mechanical failure and went down in the Hudson River on Saturday. Some onlookers called it a crash, but a fire department spokesman called it a controlled landing. The New York Times quoted 21-year-old passenger Jose Mejia, who said he heard loud banging noises followed by a loss of power, a fall to the river, and the inflation of the yellow safety pontoons. Quote, "When those things inflated underneath the helicopter, that was the most reassuring feeling," unquote. The pilot and all 7 passengers escaped without serious injury and were rescued from the water by private boats and the U.S. Coast Guard. Holly Baker of the FAA told WNBC-TV in New York that the event is being classified as an incident, not an accident, by the agency and will be investigated. Global private equity firm The Carlyle Group has announced that it's reached an agreement to acquire ARINC Incorporated from its current shareholders, including several commercial airlines. Financial details were not disclosed, but the Wall Street Journal reports the sale will likely result in a small windfall for ARINC's shareholders, including American Airlines, Delta, Northwest, Continental, United, and U.S. Airways. Combined, the airlines own 90% of ARINC. The company has been the primary provider of communications technology to the nation's airlines for nearly 80 years. It also provides communications solutions to airports and other aviation-related industries. Up next on ANN, it's Boeing's big day, but it could be another big year for Airbus. It's official. Dawn has been delayed until September, and GA protests airline editorials on user fees. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3320.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft merges the most advanced technologies from the fields of hearing science, aviation communications, and performance audio. Clarity Aloft headsets use Comply canal tips composed of soft, viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. The noise-canceling microphone is optimized for speech frequencies in high-noise environments. The low-profile headband is featherweight and comfortable. Just three reasons why you need to feel and hear the difference a Clarity Aloft stereo headset can make for you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headsets on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for July 9th, 2007. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Sunday may have belonged to Boeing, introducing its 787 Dreamliner, but it looks so far that the year belongs to Airbus. The Wall Street Journal reports the European plane maker announced on Friday it received 680 new airplane orders through June 30th. That's a healthy 131 over Boeing's announced year-to-date totals. As ANN reported, Airbus received a significant boost from the recent Paris Air Show, where it racked up an impressive 748 orders and commitments from customers. The announcement is a marked reversal of fortunes for Airbus compared to last year, when Boeing led Airbus through early July, 480 to 117. Boeing finished up the year of 2006 with a record 1,044 orders, compared to 824 for Airbus. Airbus also leads Boeing on the number of planes delivered to customers. That's a significant tally, because that's when those big checks actually arrive. Over the first 6 months of this year, Airbus delivered 231 aircraft, compared to 220 for Boeing. If Airbus continues its pace, it could take back the sales crown in 2007. Last year's second place finish to Boeing was Airbus's first in 5 years. NASA told ANN on Saturday the launch of the oft-delayed Dawn spacecraft, a mission that will explore the asteroids Ceres and Vespa between Mars and Jupiter, has now been bumped all the way to September. Late last month, some at NASA questioned whether the planned July launch was overly optimistic due to continuing glitches with the Delta II rocket and difficulties with coordinating launch support. The big reasons for the delay now are limited launch opportunities for Dawn in July, and the potential impact of launch preparations for the upcoming Phoenix Mars lander mission, which is set for early August. Phoenix will examine whether the icy soil on Mars could have been a habitable environment for microbial life. NASA says a September launch for Dawn maintains all the science mission goals that a July launch would have provided, while giving the agency some breathing room for other planned missions. If you've flown with Continental, American, U.S. Airways, Northwest, or United recently, and picked up the in-flight magazines from the seat pockets, you may have seen editorials from the CEOs of those respective carriers, each with a common message. You, the passenger, are helping to pay for corporate bigwigs flying around in their biz jets, taxing an already stressed air traffic control network. The editorials are an attempt to garner support for the FAA's proposed airline-backed funding plan. American Airlines CEO Gerald Arpey writes, in the most recent edition of American Way, the company's in-flight magazine, quote, "What that means, as crazy as it sounds, is that the airlines and our customers, that's you, are paying a subsidy to the tune of $1.5 billion a year to the companies and individuals who can afford their own aircraft," unquote. Forbes reports the editorial also tells customers to contact their congressman if they want a system that does not force passengers to subsidize corporate aircraft. Ed Bolin, president of the National Business Aviation Association, sent a fiery letter to United Airlines CEO Glenn Tilton. Quote, "Your email provides no factual information about what is needed for system transformation, but instead makes a blatant attempt to encourage ill-informed support from people who are justified in their frustration with this summer's unprecedented airline delays," unquote. Aviation consultant Michael Boyd says both sides have gone a little overboard with their claims, and passengers are still going to have to suffer through delays no matter how the user fee battle now being waged in the House and Senate plays out. Quote, "We're just slicing up the pie differently. I guarantee you, you won't see a penny less in airfares," unquote. Aero News has learned a general who led the command charged with resupplying deployed U.S. forces in Vietnam during the 1960s passed away July 2nd at his home in Bethesda, Maryland. General Howell M. Estes, Jr. was 92. In addition to his responsibilities supporting U.S. forces fighting communism in the jungles of Southeast Asia, he had oversight of a global military airlift system, now known as Air Mobility Command, to include aeromedical evacuation operations, air rescue, air weather, photography, and mapping services throughout the world. Estes was a native of Fort Oglethorpe, Georgia, and was the son of an Army officer. He graduated in 1936 from West Point and was assigned to the cavalry before he entered pilot training school in June 1939. He later served as a flight instructor at Brooks Field in San Antonio in April of 1940. In 1947, he was transferred to the newly created U.S. Air Force. During the Korean War, General Estes flew 25 combat missions over Korea and picked up 328 hours in the B-29. His military decorations include the Air Force Distinguished Service Medal and the Army's Distinguished Service Medal. A more complete career summary for retired General Howell M. Estes, Jr. is available in the print version of this story on our website at www.aero-news.net. Still ahead, flight service still isn't working. A lawsuit is filed over a 2005 accident in Florida. And first class comes to regional jets. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
Higher, faster, farther, safer. Those are the watchwords of Columbia Aircraft Manufacturing's new generation of personal airplanes. The Columbia 350 is a normally aspirated four-seater that carries 1,100 pounds and cruises up to 190 knots with a next-generation Avidyne or Garmin electronic cockpit to show you the way. With a max range of 1,300 nautical miles, the Columbia 350 is the plane that you deserve when you're a businessman on the go or a Sunday flyer in a hurry to his next great adventure. To schedule a demo flight in a Columbia 350 or a turbocharged 400, call 541-318-1144 or check them out on the web at flycolumbia.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Monday, July 9, 2007. I'm Paul Platt. The Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association is still dogging Lockheed Martin to meet the standards set out in its contract to manage and consolidate the nation's flight service stations. AOPA's latest survey of members finds there's still a long way to go. A June 22nd survey among pilots shows there were no significant changes in briefer professionalism, knowledge of local geography, or familiarity with equipment since a similar survey May 29th. Nearly half of respondents rated briefer meteorological knowledge as poor or very poor. 24% said service had improved over the past 30 days, but 36% thought it got worse. Overall, respondents said the rapid decline in performance has at least leveled off. The follow-up survey also found that 38% remained dissatisfied about the process of filing flight plans through briefers. 38% still say their calls are not being answered within a minute or less. Some are waiting more than 10 minutes. 24% continue to experience dropped calls. Lockheed Martin's contract requires 85% of calls to be answered within 20 seconds. Melissa Ruttinger, AOPA Vice President of Regulatory Affairs, said, quote, "Service has gotten marginally better, but it's still bad. We'll continue to hold Lockheed's feet to the fire until we see better results," unquote. Find a link to AOPA's blog with a day-by-day accounting of the organization's work on the problem in the print version of this story at aero-news.net. A 2006 plane crash that killed three people, including the then treasurer of the Cirrus Owners and Pilots Association, has spurred a lawsuit and accusations against the plane's pilot and Cirrus design. As ANN reported, COPA treasurer Barbara Fornell, her husband Glenn, and passenger Mario Alberto Castillo were lost when their SR-22 went down off Hutchinson Island, Florida, shortly after takeoff from Witham Field in Stewart. Glenn Fornell was reportedly at the controls when the plane took off on February 4, 2006. Just after takeoff, Fornell radioed ATC, stating he was having instrument problems and requested a return to Stewart. The plane went down in the ocean shortly afterward. In the lawsuit, filed on behalf of Castillo's estate, wife, and two children, family members allege Fornell failed to exercise the required degree of care in securing the safety of the aircraft. The suit also names the plane's owner, Aircraft Guarantee Management and Trust, in Houston, Texas, alleging it failed to ensure the aircraft was safe before takeoff. This is according to the Treasure Coast Palm. Cirrus Design is also named in the litigation for allegedly failing to design the SR-22 to be safe to fly in dangerous conditions. Instrument conditions prevailed at the time of the accident, and the plane was on an IFR flight plan to St. Augustine, Florida. The image of regional jets as glorified puddle jumpers, lacking the amenities of a real airliner, is about to change. Several major airlines are putting first-class sections in their regional jets. As ANN has reported, Northwest Airlines is already adding new 76-seat Bombardier CRJ-900s and Embraer 175s for its Mesaba and Compass subsidiaries, respectively. Those planes include a dozen first-class seats apiece, as well as more room and coach. Delta plans to fly 77 dual-class regional jets by 2008. Subsidiaries and partners of United already fly 115 70-seat regional jets with first class, economy plus, and coach. It's no coincidence that the three airlines pushing for larger regional jet seats are also three carriers most recently involved in bankruptcy. Northwest, United, and Delta all gained concessions from their pilots to allow more of the smaller jets. But the trend does have downsides. Regional jets use more fuel per passenger mile than large airliners, and some airports, most notably those in the metro New York area, have asked the FAA for restrictions on the smaller jets to reduce congestion. And of course, there's no free lunch. Those first-class seats could cost you three times or more as much as a seat on the same flight in coach. And finally, when NASA goes looking for evidence of life elsewhere in the solar system, it starts by looking for signs of water. A U.S. National Academy of Sciences panel said that's too narrow a focus. NASA commissioned the report, according to Australia's Courier Mail newspaper, to determine if its current approach is sound. The panel responded by saying the space agency may be short-sighted in thinking that alien life would be comparable to life on Earth, containing elements of water and carbon. Committee Chairman John Barras, a professor of oceanography at the University of Washington in Seattle, says NASA may want to look at less conventional areas of our solar system, like Venus and Saturn's moons, for signs of life. Quote, "We wanted to actually think outside of that box a little, and at least try to articulate some of the other possibilities besides water-carbon life," unquote. So, Mr. Spock's copper-based hemoglobin and the cantina scene from Star Wars might not be so far-fetched after all. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, in my weekly chat with CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, we'll discuss those times that diversions are necessary. How prepared are you? And if you haven't done so already, subscribe to our Aerocasts. You'll find them on iTunes, Yahoo, and Odeo, and our website too, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.